Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secured retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in, because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. I'm Mike Zlatnik, Big Mike. Today, it is my distinct pleasure and a privilege to welcome Paul Moore. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing great. I'm so honored to be on your show.
And I appreciate you coming. I missed you at the last CG, but finally we caught up, and I appreciate you coming on the podcast. When I heard that you have a phenomenal podcast with a very intriguing name, that got me all going.
Yeah.
You have a podcast, How to Lose Money. That's a great subject. That is a phenomenal subject.
It's a painful subject. I must be crazy to call my podcast How to Lose Money. But can I tell you why I did?
Sure. Would you please?
You know, what I realize, I talk to investors and entrepreneurs all the time. And, you know, when they get up on stage, they're talking about these great, grandiose things that they've done and all their successes. But when I talk to them one-on-one, I realize, you know, they went through a lot of pain, a lot of failure, a lot of rejection, days of hopelessness. And they said that those are the things that shaped them and made them into the person that they became. And you know, we all know what happens when someone wins the lottery, or when a lot of people, you know, get a large inheritance and they weren't ready for it. They don't handle it real well, and because they haven't been trained by pain. So we decided to start a podcast to interview successful entrepreneurs, investors, and business owners, and ask them, tell us about your pain, tell us about what went wrong and how that shaped and formed your life, and help our listeners to know what they can do to avoid the same pain.
I was going to ask you a couple of words about you, but you started phenomenally about pain. I'm sure you met Corey Boatwright at the Mastermind.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Corey says your pain is your power. So
yeah.
I like to quote him. Yes, your pain is the best teacher rather than your success. People learn a whole lot more from mistakes and problems and pain than they learn from successes. So
yeah, I think it's easier to avoid doing something wrong than it is to know that you're going to be in the right place at the right time to do something right. I think both are important, but if we can learn to not make that same mistake again, we're way down the road, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So tell my audience a little bit about you. Who is Paul? I know you went to Ohio State, which is great football school. I have been to Columbus, Ohio. It's a great school. And you went a little bit at the Ford Motors, and then you had an HR company startup, and then you sold it to a successful, when it grew, you sold it to a public company.
Yeah.
So that's great. Tell us a little bit about that, and tell us a little bit about you, who you are. Do you have kids, family, cat, dog? What do you like to do? Yeah. I know you have a great charity that you support.
Yeah. Speaking of football, I played football for 12 years and I thought I wanted to go to Ohio State to play football, but I was nowhere near good enough. And so I got an engineering degree. Then I went on to get an MBA at Ohio State, went to Ford Motor Company for 5 years. I was on a management development program and I wasn't doing that well because I think I spent a lot of my spare time trying to figure out a side business to start, whether it was an oil change shop or a property tax consulting firm or real estate investing. And so about 5 years into that, I left and I started this HR outsourcing company, and we just hit the wave. We were at the right place at the right time, and we rode that thing up, and 5 years later, we were able to sell it to a publicly traded company. And then I realized later, you know, what am I going to do? I'm 36. I'm retired. And I'll tell you, Mike, if you've ever tried to retire young, it's miserable. So many people think it's a great idea. And I guess if you've got a great plan, it would have been a great idea. Speaking of kids, I've been married 31 years. I had two kids at the time, and I have two more now. We have four. And so we moved to the Blue Ridge Mountains of Central Virginia, Southwest Virginia, actually. And we moved on top of a mountain with 120 acres. We started a nonprofit organization. And I got bored really quick and just realized, you know, I need a better plan. So I actually started flipping houses years before the term flipping. ever came out. This was about 20 years ago. And we did that. And I thought, well, if I can make money flipping, I can make more building. Now, I didn't take into account that I didn't know how to tighten my own doorknob on my house. So I shouldn't have ever been into building, but I did get into building. And that was one of the many ways we lost money. Built about 7 homes. I eventually did a small subdivision, flipped a bunch of high-end waterfront lots, which was very profitable during the big run-up prior to the crash. And so I've been involved in all kinds of real estate, including a couple hotels, couple subdivisions, one quasi-multifamily, quasi-hotel in North Dakota during the oil boom. And I later settled on Class B multifamily and self-storage, which is what I'm raising money for now.
Just like you, I realized too that I had to move beyond the corporate world years ago, and I retired from software engineering management executive, and I know exactly what you mean by switching to your own business. There's nothing like that in this world.
Right.
The good old expression in the corporate world, do you want to be head of a snake or tail of a dragon?
Right, right. Oh, I like that. You know, I haven't heard that in years. Head of a snake or tail of a dragon. That's good.
That's right. So working for a big shop, you're a tail of a dragon.
When you right, that's for sure.
Run your own shop, you're head of a snake.
Right.
You had a very interesting, riches to rags and then rags to riches story. Would you tell the audience a little bit about how you had $1.5 million in a bank, then went to $1.5 million in debt, and then got out of that debt and became successful again? And all of it happened, in 13 months, something like that?
I've had a lot of pain and a lot of setbacks since then, but that particular story, so I went in 97 from almost $2 million in the bank after selling our company. I gave a good deal of that away to charities that I'm passionate about, and I'll tell you more about that toward the end. But I had a lot of money in the bank, had no sense, no idea how to invest it. I didn't know the difference between investing and gambling, and speculating. So, you know, investing, Mike, you know this, is when your principal is generally safe and you've got a chance to make a return. Speculating or gambling is when your principal is not at all safe and you've got a chance to make a return. And I thought I was an investor, but I was really a speculator. So I lost money investing with some guy who had a foreign exchange program who's now in jail for 153 years. And he still won't tell people where he hid the $18 million he had from like 2,000 investors. I lost money on some kind of a tax lien type thing, which I had no business being involved in. Made money on other things, flipped, like I said, a lot of stuff. But we found ourselves at about $2.5 million in debt exactly one decade after I sold my company to the month. It was all tied to real estate, thank goodness. I mean, it was my own house. It was a vacation house. It was all these waterfront lots that we still had as we were plunging down into what would be the greatest recession that we all know about since the Depression. And I was sitting in my chair one morning. I do a kind of a morning meditation. And I was thinking about this guy who's one of my heroes. His name's George Mueller. He's actually pronounced Muller, but spelled Mueller. And he's a German guy who lived in England through almost the whole 19th century, the 1800s. And he ran an orphanage and he never took on any debt at all. And he was very generous with anything he got. He raised something like $200 million without ever one time asking an investor or a donor to give a penny. He did it all by just his mindset, by his faith. And I thought, what would George Mueller do if he was in my situation? Well, first of all, he wouldn't be in debt at all. But he wasn't, and I was in debt. So I thought, well, he would start giving very, very generously. And so I told my family, I said, hey, we're really, really, our back's against the wall here. I told my friends, our back's against the wall. Looks like we might be facing bankruptcy. We're going to start giving our way out of debt. And that was really strange. But I said, I don't think I have any other options. I'm going to give really generously. And I'm going to believe that, you know, that the Eastern thing, they call it karma. As a Christian, I call it, you know, the law of sowing and reaping. I'm going to believe that something good's going to happen. Well, 4 weeks later, like we started this January 1st, 2008, Mike. 4 weeks later, I ran into a real estate developer at a Subway restaurant, and he told me this idea. I said, I can't subdivide this 5-acre thing. I was going to turn into a waterfront little subdivision, and it's killing me. I got $860,000 in debt on that alone. And if I could only figure out a way to subdivide that, he goes, hey, you ought to try this. And I said, oh, that won't work. I already checked that law out. He goes, yeah, check it out again. And I went and checked the law, and I had this amazing light bulb moment that basically for time's sake, I won't tell you all about that, but I had this light bulb moment. In the next 13 months, I spent going to the county, going to the bankers, going to all these different avenues, and I ended up selling that subdivision in 5 1-acre parcels for a very large profit, and I ended up completely debt-free 13 months later.
And that's great. That's quite a story.
Yeah, and so that was my worst real estate deal ever for about the first 2 years. And then the last year, it turned into be the most profitable ROI I ever had.
That's great. Well, I have to say that I happen to agree with you. You should give before you receive. And by giving and helping others, you will often receive a whole lot more. Giving from the heart makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, really does.
So, yeah, I appreciate you you sharing. And while we're talking about giving, could you share a little bit about your favorite charity? If I understand this correctly, you are helping fight human trafficking. This is your close to the heart subject, and this is your favorite charity. Could you just say a couple of words about that?
Mike, did you know that if you took the record profits, and I'm not saying average, I'm saying the record profits of Apple, Starbucks, General Motors, and Nike, and rolled that number together, then doubled it, okay? Double their record profits. That would be the approximate revenue generated by human trafficking worldwide every year.
That's unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. And I'm telling you that if I was alive in the mid-1800s, I want to believe that I would be an abolitionist and I would be fighting against slavery. And if I would have been an adult in the 1950s and 60s, I want to believe I'd be fighting for civil rights. Well, this is slavery, and this is a massive civil rights problem that's been ripped from these people. That's that $250 billion that I just explained. That's a huge number, but let's put it in terms of one person. Let's say it was my daughter or your sister. These human traffickers, these slave owners, are making up to $500,000 in revenue per year from these children, from these girls. It's heartbreaking and it's tragic. And so I'm doing everything I can in the rest of my life to raise $1 billion or more to fight human trafficking and rescue its victims. And specifically, I'm trying to help fund organizations like Exodus Cry, who made a movie called Nefarious. And I'd highly recommend that if you don't know much about human trafficking, reach out to me. I'll send you a copy of the movie in the mail.
What's the website for the audience? What is the website that folks should go?
You can go to Exodus, E-X-O-D-U-S, Cry, C-R-Y. That's exoduscry.com. And you can get you can download the movie or get a copy of the movie from them, or you can get it from me, and I'm happy to send you one as well at my website, wellingscapital.com.
Wellingscapital.com. Yeah, I appreciate you sharing. It is a very painful subject to even discuss. We're all aware of it. It is horrific that we're living in the age of slavery in the 21st century, and right. A lot of it goes behind the scenes, and a lot of money gets spent on useless things, and problem like that is not looked at. But our politicians seem to care about other things than finding a problem like that.
Yeah,
I appreciate sharing. So let's chat a little bit about business. So You mentioned self-storage. You mentioned multifamily. I love those subjects too. We have a lot of investments in those asset classes, and absolutely appreciate your view. So we are in the day and age of high prices and low cap rates. So I'm just deviating from the standard stuff. Let's hit the reality right now. The prices are high. People are overpaying for those asset classes. Question number one: those asset classes are phenomenal, but how do you find a good deal? How do you find a great self-storage or multifamily? I know the answer quite often is for investors is to invest with somebody like you or me who spend time and energy and money to find good deals. But in general, if somebody were to try to get into this business, what's the best strategy to find high-quality deals that are worth investing into?
Well, we really need more time than I can get into at this point, but I will say that I have found after beating my head, so we're all of our partners at Wellings Capital are in our mid-50s. We've lost money, as I mentioned, and we've made money, and we are kind of tired of losing money. So we decided we're going to be very, very conservative. We're going to be very strict in our underwriting. And that's caused us not to invest very often. And so we've had a hard time finding deals. And I've got to tell you that, you know, some people you work with, Mike, from what I've heard, and others of our friends out there in the world have done a better job than we have finding deals. Now, I have to ask myself in the multifamily world right now, why would somebody overpay by 10 or 20% for a deal? And number one, sometimes they might have 1031 exchange money and they want to shield it from taxes. They're willing to pay a little more. I get that. Some of them have self-directed IRA or self-directed 401k money, and they're willing to be a little more liberal with their return expectations. I don't really get that, but it happens. But honestly, something else that's happening right now, Mike, is there's a lot of new people in the business, and they've just been trained, they've just been mentored, and I get that. And some of them don't really know what they're doing, and worse, some of them are just trying to do a deal because they have capital to spend. And so that's causing a very serious situation. All that's true. And then there's one more factor, and that is there's international money coming in the U.S. I get some money from a friend in China, some investor money, and they say that they would be willing to live with pretty much a zero return just to get in the U.S. multifamily game. How can I compete against somebody who's willing to put up with a zero return? So those are some of the reasons it's hard right now to find multifamily. I will tell you quickly switching here, self-storage is a little different. There are 53,000 self-storage facilities in the U.S., which is about the same as all the Subways, McDonald's, and Starbucks combined. And in a lot of them, probably 65 to 75% are run by mom-and-pop operators. A lot of those are in great locations in the path of growth, but they're just not run real well. I can tell you about one near Raleigh, North Carolina right now that's in the path of growth on the main road, and they don't have a website at all. They don't accept credit cards at all. Not only do they not do auto pay, they don't even accept a credit card. They're 100% full. Their rates are 25% probably below the average in the area. There's not another facility nearby. It's got everything going for it. And, that could be acquired, and it's even got land to build more on. I mean, this, and there are thousands, I would even dare say maybe tens of thousands of deals like that out there. And that's why I'm expanding from, I wrote a book called The Perfect Investment, which is about multifamily, Mike, but I'm expanding, and our company's expanding our reach looking at self-storage because there are far more available. And as far as how to find them, finally getting around to your question, they could be through self-storage brokers, or if, of course, through multifamily as well, if you're multifamily, and they can also be done through letter writing campaigns and just knocking on doors.
Paul, this is brilliant. I just love your whole story. How you started, why, and then you ended with trying to answer the question. I happen to agree with you. There's a lot of, let's just call it dumb and dumber money. there is just so much money chasing
dumb after deals. Dumber money. Thank you. I like that.
Yeah. I don't know if you met Eddie from the CG, Eddie Speed. He's in CG.
No, I didn't.
Oh, he's a cowboy. But long story short, he's a brilliant guy, the notes guy, and kind of quoting him, he says it's a greater fool theory. Right now, there's just greater fools, and they keep throwing money. They're paying cap rates. What used to be 9-10, they're paying 5.
Oh, yeah. So
it's a little crazy. But you can't compete with dumb money, and you shouldn't. So, by the way, your whole story on self-storage, it's amazingly true. Not only is it true, we have a deal coming up. Literally, we're going to be funding within a week or two that looks exactly like that with another gentleman from the CG Mastermind. I'm going to leave that offline, but
okay,
it's an existing facility. Exactly the case like that. It's right. Below the market on the rents. It's got full occupancy, and it's got land right next to it. It's got perfect expansion strategy. So deals like this exist. It does take time to find the right people. And these opportunities are good opportunities. They present strong downside protection, and then they have pretty good upside. I appreciate your view. I share it 100%, and that's exactly what happens. But finding them is not easy, and you have to network heavily, and you have to work with the right people. And in this environment where everything is overpriced, you need to find either motivation, special situation, or mismanaged facility and somebody who just doesn't know what they're doing. So from that perspective, you could find a deal that way. So Wellington Capital, is that a fund or is it just it's a management company and you have individual deals? How do people work with you? I'm just curious.
We, Wellings Capital has we syndicate each deal individually. And
so you're a syndicator. You do individual deal syndication.
Right. So if we're going to do an apartment deal or a self-storage deal, or even in the future, we might even add mobile home parks. Warren Buffett's not dumb. And so anyway, we are likely going to be joining with more operators. We're really, really careful and slow to vet operators, but we're probably going to be vetting more operators as we bring more capital in. And then we'll, on a deal-by-deal basis, even if we do a fund in the future, we're committed to letting our investors choose whether they want to be in or out of any given deal. I know that can get complex and to become a hassle, but that's probably how we'll do it if we do a fund in the future. But as of now, Wellings Capital is just syndicating individual deals.
And I appreciate the clarification. I'm a fund manager. I run a couple of funds, and I'm a flagship fund invest with guys like you and other folks who do have solid syndication. So it's a very exciting topic for me because I spend a lot of time looking through the deals, and we love right operators and right deals.
Yeah.
So we got to talk offline a little bit more, but for the sake of the podcast, I appreciate you sharing.
All right.
A couple of other quick questions. Do you have a good book to suggest to folks besides the one that you wrote on multifamily? So could you mention that book again? And then is there another book that you...
Yeah, there is. I'm kind of embarrassed. I don't have the exact name of it here. I can almost see it on my bookshelf over there. So my book is The Perfect Investment, which is the subtitle is very long. It's something like Capitalizing on the Historic Move into Multifamily Investing. And but my favorite book on apartments, on multifamily, is by Steve Burgess, B-E-R-G-E-S. And it's The Complete Guide to Buying and Selling Apartment Buildings. And Steve does a great job in there laying out the case for multifamily and how to do it.
That's great. I appreciate that suggestion. So going back to your core kind of experience, competency, all of us operate out there. And one thing I wanted to ask you, you have a lot of wisdom and experience. What's driving you? What's motivating you? What's your big why?
Well, like I talked about earlier, I've been alive 54 years, and I figure I have 46 healthy years left to work till I'm 100. And this is a guy who tried to retire at 36 and got bored to death. I really want to place $1 billion or more into causes I really believe in, like fighting human trafficking and rescuing victims. So that's a big why. I have other things, but that is probably the one thing I've mentioned at this point.
And that's important. Living every day and having a drive to help others, to find, and people have a cure for cancer, and some people have a cure for human trafficking, and that's right. A very noble why.
So. Yeah.
So again, your podcast, How to Lose Money, we have a minute or two left. Do you have any more kind of really cute worst deals, how to lose money? I mean, give me a quick example, just as a parting great note.
There's an so example. Many.
Yeah, just anyone. Anything.
Okay, so show number two, we had a guy named Wade Myers. Wade, and that's WadeMyers.com. He's a friend of mine now, so I know his website, but he lost $71 million in the dot-com bubble. And what was really sad about that is he built a company where he had $75 million in investors. He had his own money in there too. He had Goldman Sachs. He had all kinds of great large investors in there throwing their money behind him in this, you know, the dot-com as it was ballooning, you know, in the 97, 98, 99. And before the dot-com bubble burst, he got a $32 million investment from a very large group. And right about that time, he got some new information and realized this was going to go south. Well, he said to all of them, he called all his main investors and he said, "Hey guys, I've got some information based on the competitive landscape, based on the dot-com bubble, which was bursting already by that time. We've got a potential buyer for about $75 million, which would give us all a break even. Let's get out now." And all the investors, especially the brand new one at $32 million, said, "No way. That's all well and good. I expect to double or triple or quadruple my money. I don't want to break even. We're staying in." And he got outvoted. Well, a couple of years later, they sold that company, not for $75 million, Mike, but they sold it for $4 million. So they lost $71 million. And I think that that is a kind of an example of the sunk cost fallacy, which would basically be, you know, look, you don't make future decisions based on what you spent in the past. We're all aware of that. And I think that's a massive lesson in that arena that Wade learned. There's all kinds of other lessons, including Dave Thompson, who's a big guy on Bigger Pockets, who lost $225 million in a wire transfer fraud. And there's all kinds of others.
Wow. That's mind-boggling. I appreciate the sharing. And how would people reach you if they wanted to speak with you, get a hold of you, invest with you, say hello to you? Is there an email or should they go to the website? What's the best way to reach you?
We work with accredited investors generally, so we're not, you know, a fit for everybody, but they can find out more about us at wellingscapital.com. That's WELLINGS capital.com. And we also have howtolosemoney.com for our podcast. And then they can find my book, The Perfect Investment, on Amazon.
Paul, thank you kindly. I really appreciate your wisdom, your sharing, your thoughts, your generosity, and your humbleness. I'm grateful to you for coming on the podcast. Thank you so much. And looking forward to meeting you in person at the next CG Mastermind.
Yeah. Oh, Mike, it's been a real honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me on. And we look forward to having you on our podcast as well.
Yeah, and me too. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike Zlotnick. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.